In our Bibles, then, to 2 Samuel. We traced a little bit last week the growth of David's family as 2 Samuel chapter 3 outlines for us the growth of David's empire versus the degeneration of Ishbosheth's empire. And part of the reason for that dichotomy is because there was constant war between the two of them. Verse 1 of chapter 3, there was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David, and David grew stronger and stronger while the house of Saul became weaker and weaker. So in order to detail one of the ways that David's house was becoming stronger and stronger is to show that David was being blessed with many children during his time at Hebron, and it lists off his children there in verses 2 through 5. And we spent most of last week just looking at the significance of some of those people and anticipating the role that some of those men will play in Israelite history. And so we're picking up with verse 6 as we take a look at changing allegiances. Going back and reminding us that there is a war between the house of Saul and the house of David, verse 6 says, "While there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, Abner was making himself strong in the house of Saul." Now, we looked at Abner just a little bit in previous studies and what he was accomplishing. It was basically Abner who set Ishbosheth up as the king in Mahanaim. And as we look at our map to just sort of review where we're at, Mahanaim is over here. It's this little spot right under my magnifying glass here on the eastern side of the Jordan River. It's up in the highlands, kind of in the mountains, and that is where Abner set up Ishbosheth as the king over northern Israel. We saw last week it probably took Abner about 5 years to reconquer this land of Jezreel, because Israel lost that land during the war with the Philistines in which Saul died. And so it took him 5 years, and then he established Ishbosheth as the king over Mahanaim and over Israel. And Ishbosheth only reigns for 2 years. And during those 2 years, there was constant war between him and David. An example of that war was found back in chapter 2, where Abner brought the soldiers of Ishbosheth out, and they had the battle, and we have the 12 guys coming out to do a representative champion battle, and hopefully whoever won that would be declared the winner of the battle. But the 12 guys all ran out, grabbed each other by the hair, and thrust their swords through each other's side, and all 24 men died instantly with no clear winner. And so because the champion battle didn't work, it turned into an all-out battle, and David won. His side lost only 19 men, and Abner's side lost 300 and some men. And so it was very clearly a victory for David. That was an example of the type of war that was going on for the next 2 years between Ishbosheth and David. And so if you fight a war like that, eventually you're going to lose, if you're losing in those sorts of numbers. It's going to be a war of attrition. And even though David's ruling over a smaller kingdom with a much more limited number of troops, when you're losing in those kinds of ratios, you can't maintain the war very long. But during the 2 years that Ishbosheth reigns, we find out it's really Abner is the one that is setting things up and calling the shots. He's making himself stronger. He's the one that is really ruling things in that northern kingdom, and Ishbosheth is just a puppet ruler. It was Abner who was in charge. So verse 7, we had to set up that Abner's making himself strong, because that's going to lead right into the next verse, which is verse 7. Saul had a concubine whose name was Rizpah. I think that's one of the top 10 lists of most popular girl names in 2016. Is Rizpah. And he had a concubine whose name was Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah. And Ishbosheth said to Abner, "Why have you gone into my father's concubine?" We've got to recognize Abner is an uncle of Saul. If Saul was king and he had these concubines, they were his royal harem, When the king died, the royal harem was off limits. They were sequestered and nobody else was allowed to remarry them, even though under the law they would be eligible to remarry because they have been widowed. But according to the customs of a monarchy, they are sequestered and secluded from society. They're never allowed to marry again because anybody marrying them would then have a claim to the throne, because that would make you a close relative of the previous husband. And so you couldn't do that. And also, because under the Mosaic law, if a man died and didn't have any children by that wife, his brother was supposed to go into his wife, marry her, and have a child in his name. And so anybody that produced a child with this concubine could then make a claim that that child is the next descendant to the next heir to the throne. So when one king passed off the scene, you didn't want to take that risk of having rival claims to the throne. So all the concubines were set aside and nobody was allowed to remarry them. So this gal Rizpah is part of Saul's harem. She's one of the concubines. And Ishbosheth comes up with this great idea to accuse Abner of trying to make a claim to the throne. Probably because Ishbosheth, she sees Abner growing in his popularity and in his power base, and he wants to try and push Abner off to the side and gain that power to himself. After all, what monarch wants to realize that he's a puppet ruler and not do anything about it? And so Ishbosheth is trying to push Abner off and attach this label of treason to him by saying that he has claimed one of Saul's concubines. The similar thing happened when Solomon became king. They had given David in his old age a concubine by the name of Abishag. I think that's number 9 in the popular names of girls in 2016. It's Abishag. And David had, it says that pretty specifically, David never knew her. In a biblical sense, and so the marriage was never consummated. But she would have been considered part of the royal harem. When Solomon became king, his brother Adonijah, who was next in line after Absalom, and was actually ahead of Solomon in the normal order of who would be king, Adonijah asked permission from David's wife, Bathsheba, to marry Abishag. It was, to them, a blatant claim to the throne. Now, to us, we just say, that's kind of weird. To say, yeah, I want to marry my dad's wife. It's no. But to them, it was a claim to the throne. And Solomon recognized that, and so he punished Adonijah. And he had him executed for treason because of trying to make this claim to the throne and strengthen his claim over Solomon's. Well, that's what Ishbosheth is accusing Abner of doing. Why have you gone into my father's concubine? And probably, again, it's because Ishbosheth realizes that he is just a puppet ruler. He has no real power. Nobody's listening to him. And it's really Abner that's calling all the shots. And so Abner does not take this accusation well. Look at what he says here. Then Abner was very angry over the words of Ishbosheth. So you can just place yourself in Abner's place. What's Abner been doing for the last 7 years?
Saying thank you.
Saying thank you? No. For the last 7 years, Abner has been trying to secure more and more territory and power to Ishbosheth. He's the one that set Ishbosheth on the throne. He's the one that instituted the wars with David to try to bring Judah back under Ishbosheth's rule. He's the one that went out and recaptured Jezreel. And so for the last 7 years, Abner has been doing nothing but trying to strengthen Ishbosheth's kingship. And so now comes this accusation. And you can understand, he is very upset. And look at the reply that he gives. Am I a dog's head of Judah? Now this again might not make a whole lot of sense to us because we like dogs. How many of you like dogs? I like puppy dogs, yep. Yeah. How many of you have a dog? Okay. Just a couple of us in here. Yep, we got dogs. But, you know, we in our Western society, we like dogs. We keep them as pets. We think they're cute. You know, they sit on the couch next to us and we pet them. And we just keep them around because they're lots of fun. Jewish people didn't do this. Dogs were unclean. They were dirty, filthy, stinking, rotten animals. They still are, but we just think they're cute. Okay. And so they're dirty, they're smelly, you don't want them around. All they do is run around and eat garbage. How many of your dogs eat garbage? Does your dog get into the garbage? No? I'll trade you. No. You want a big rowdy dog in exchange for your small, calm dog? Dogs were considered an unclean and a filthy animal. And so he says, what am I, a dog's head of Judah? And notice where Judah falls into this lineup. Yeah, what am I down here? Am I the dregs of society? Am I on the bottom here that you are making this accusation against me? And to this day, I keep showing steadfast love to the house of Saul, your father, to his brothers, to his friends, and have not given you into the hand of David. Do you detect a little bit of a threat there? What have I been doing all this time? I've been protecting you. I've been promoting your father's house. I've been strengthening your father's house. And I haven't turned you over to your rival king. Yet. It's not even a veiled threat. It's a very blatant threat that Abner is telling Ishbosheth, I've been protecting you all this time. And yet you charge me today with a fault concerning a woman. In other words, the statement is basically, don't you think I'm above that kind of petty grabbing at power? If I wanted to be king, don't you think I could have taken it myself? Do you think I'd need to do an underhanded thing like take your father's concubine to make a claim for the throne? Ishbosheth, you are a puppet. You're nothing. I've been holding you up all this time, and if I wanted to have someone else be king, I wouldn't have had to go about it the way you're suggesting. So don't accuse me of such things. Verse 9 is where the allegiance really begins to change. God do so to Abner. And you have to imagine him giving this little signal here. God do what to Abner? We say, God do so to Abner. God do what? He's sort of calling down a curse upon himself if he doesn't fulfill his next statement. So the picture is, God do so to Abner and more. If I do not accomplish for David what the Lord has sworn to him, to transfer the kingdom from the house of Saul and set up the throne of David over Israel and over Judah, from Dan to Beersheba. So what is Abner telling Ishbosheth? You're toast. Buddy, I am so done with you. Any help that I have given you up to this point, I am cutting it off. You are finished. You're not even toast. I'm not even going to bother to bake you. You're just a slice of bread. We're going to throw it on the floor and let the dog get it. You are so done. What am I going to do? Now, you have to notice what he says here because it's going to come in important later. God do so to Abner and more also if I do not what? If I do not accomplish for David what the Lord has promised him. If who doesn't accomplish it? If I do not accomplish it, keep that in mind. Take that little thought, what Abner just said, put a little pin in it, stick it on the memory side of your wall, okay? It's going to come in later. The actual statement's not, but we're going to see what God does here. I'm done with you. I'm no longer going to help you. Instead, I'm transferring my allegiance and I'm going to start helping David. Now, we're somewhat protected in our country. We're allowed to voice our dissent with our leadership. Get an opportunity to do it here this year, now that it's an election year, and we can say, you know what? We didn't really like the way it was going there. We're going to vote this way. In ancient Near Eastern monarchies, the right to peacefully protest your government did not exist. You don't speak against the king because he holds a sword, or at least his soldiers do. And they will probably listen to him more than they'll listen to you when he says, you know what, Gary's done for. He voted against me in the upcoming in the upcoming vote of confidence. I'm just teasing, by the way. I've got to say these things. I'm going to get myself in trouble. You were not allowed to voice your dissent with the current government. It didn't go well for you. Treason was a very easy thing to convict somebody of, especially when you blurted out like this, probably in the presence of all the courtiers and all the officials of the kingdom. Abner says, I'm done with you. I'm defecting to David. I'm going to help David take your crown and your kingdom. That's not too hard to convict someone of treason when they say that kind of thing. Because if someone would walk into our Oval Office with an appointment with our president, one of our generals, and say, I'm through with the United States, I'm going to Canada. And not only am I going to Canada, but I'm going to join their military, I'm going to help them develop some plans to invade America and take over. This isn't a passive statement that Abner's making here. This is a very active statement. He is declaring his defection from the northern kingdom, and he's declaring his allegiance now for David. It's a very bold move. But it also shows his complete disdain for Ishbosheth's authority. It's almost a dare. I'm leaving you, buddy. What are you going to do about it? I'm the one that set you up on this throne. I'm the one that can take you down. And there's not a thing you can do. Now, what do you think happens? Verse 11, Ishbosheth could not answer Abner another word because he feared him. So there's Ishbosheth just left there standing there saying, what am I going to do now? He's right. I got no power whatsoever. Nobody listens to me. The only reason they listened to me is because they were afraid of him. And now if he's for David, nobody's going to stand with me. And he can't answer Abner another word. I skipped over this, so I'll back up. But Abner makes this promise and says, I'm going to help establish David as the king over Israel from Dan to Beersheba. What does he mean by that? The tribe of Dan, whoops, that was the wrong button. The tribe of Dan, in the period of the judges, initially settled down here near Ephraim. But the land was too crowded for them. So they decided to go and secure some more land for their tribe. So part of the tribe of Dan went north, way up here, north of the Sea of Galilee, and they established another colony of Dan up here in the north. It was the northernmost point in Israel. That was the territory they occupied that was farthest north, is Dan. Beersheba is way down here on the bottom. Now, I want you to notice, what is down here? Nothing. You know why there's nothing down there? Because nobody lives there. It's a quiet, peaceful place, right? Nobody lives there. Beersheba was the southernmost point of populated Israel. So when Abner says, I'm going to make David king from Dan to Beersheba, he's making a bookend statement. Same thing we do when we say that God is the Alpha and the Omega. Because when we say he's the Alpha and the Omega, we also mean he's also everything in between. It's called a bookend statement. When I'm going to make him king from Dan to Beersheba, I'm including everything in the middle. I want David to be king over all of Israel. So in order to help accomplish this, verse 12, Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, to whom does the land belong? Make your covenant with me, and behold, my hand shall be with you, to bring over all Israel to you. And when he asks that question, to whom does the land belong, who do you think he means? I think you could go one of two ways with this. What are our two options? Who does the land belong to? Could say it belongs to God. Probably not the Israelites. I took it as either one of two ways. Either he means, David, you're the one that God has promised to be king, so who does the land belong to? It belongs to you, so I'm going to help you do it. The other way I think you could take this is, David, you know who's really been running the show up here in the northern kingdom. To whom does the land belong? Yeah, it's me. So I'm going to help you take over everything. In the same way that Abner was a behind-the-scenes ruler in the northern kingdom, he's telling David, look, I can be that for you too. Anybody see any problems with that? Abner. Yeah, who's going to be really ruling here if Abner comes down? To whom does the Lord the land belong? Make your covenant with me, and behold, my hand shall be with you to bring over all Israel to you. David's response to this is, it's a positive one. Probably he is seeing in Abner God's working to fulfill the promise that was made to him when Samuel anointed him king. And he's saying, hey, if Abner helps me out, we'll surely get all of Israel united under me, so that would be a good thing. And so he agrees. He said, good, I will make a covenant with you. So he's agreeing to Abner's terms, basically, which would be to bring Abner in, make him part of the staff, the general staff that helped run Israel, and then Abner would be able to secure the support of all the northern tribes. And then they could come, they would overthrow Ishbosheth, and then they would come and make a covenant with David. David, however, has one contingency. And he says here, I'll make a covenant with you, but one thing I require of you, that is, you shall not see my face. That's a way of saying this deal is null and void unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face. So what does David want? He wants his wife back. What happened to Michal? Anybody remember? This is a little ways back. It's back in 1 Samuel 25. Abby, you remember?
He did.
David married Michal. Remember, Michal is the one that David had to go get 100 Philistine foreskins in order to marry her. That was the bride price. He was concerned he wasn't worthy to marry the king's daughter because he was from a poor family. And Saul encouraged him and said, hey, all I want is for you to defeat my enemies, so go kill 100 of them. David went, he killed 200. And he brought the prize back. Saul was disappointed because Saul was using that as a way to try to get rid of David, but it didn't work. And so Saul had to, he was honor bound, to allow David to marry his daughter, so he did. How did Michal feel about David? Yeah, she loved him. And in return, we can assume he loved her too. I mean, if he's willing to risk his life by doing that, then he probably cares quite a bit for her. Now, when David fled from Saul, probably anywhere from 10 to 12 years before this point, because we are approaching the end of Ishbosheth's kingdom, which is 7.5 years after David was crowned. So David has been king in Hebron for 7.5 years, seven and a half years, and it was before that he was fleeing from Saul anywhere from 3 to 5 years. So it has been somewhere around 12 years since David has been with his wife, Michal. So it's been quite a long time. When David fled from Saul, Saul gave Michal to another man to be wife. Was not in his authority to do it. It was a tyrannical act by Saul to take this woman who was married to another man and transfer her to someone else. He does not have that authority. Who has the authority to break up a marriage? God does. And he told us that. What God has joined together, don't let man break up. That tells us we don't have the authority to break those things apart. And so David is not doing something wrong here by taking Michal back from this other guy. She should not be married to him. It wasn't under Saul's authority to be able to do that. So he's making a legitimate requirement. I want my wife back. You won't see my face unless you first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when you come to see my face. Verse 14, then David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, and he would send these letters to Saul's son, or these messengers, because he's standing in Saul's place now. It was Saul that took Michal from him, so it is Saul's son that should return her. Give me my wife Michal, for whom I paid the bridal price of 100 foreskins of the Philistines. He's mentioning the bride price because that is an assertion to his right to this girl. He paid the bridal price. The father transferred his authority to David. They were married. That makes it legitimate for him to ask for her to come back. And he's telling Ishbosheth, you'd better help me with this. And Ishbosheth, verse 15, sent and took her from her husband, Paltiel, the son of Laish. Now, that's the name that we got back in 1 Samuel 25 when it was mentioned. But look at what happens in verse 16. Her husband went with her, weeping after her all the way to Bahurim. Then Abner said to him, "Go and return," and he returned. So David requests for this girl to come back, and Ishbosheth agrees to it, and he sends Abner to get him. But apparently this new guy who has been married to her for 12 years cares quite a bit about her, because he follows her all the way to the border of Judah. The town that's mentioned there, Bahurim, is on the border between Ephraim and Judah. And he follows his wife all the way until the point that he can't follow her anymore, and it's at that point Abner basically has to threaten him and say, "Go home. It's all done. You got to go home now." And so he has to return and go home. Isn't it amazing how sin introduces so many difficult scenarios into our lives? Because we don't obey God, we create all kinds of problems for ourselves, create all kinds of issues. And that's where David has found himself. And that wasn't because of any sin that he committed, it was because of a sin Saul committed. And so now you've got this other family being torn apart because it wasn't supposed to have been created in the first place. She should not have been married to that guy, but that's what Saul did. And that's why it is so important for us to constantly be searching what God says to determine what is right and what's wrong, to make our decisions based on what God tells us, and to not allow ourselves to turn from it to the right hand or to the left hand, but to make sure we do what He tells us to do. Because when we do what He tells us to do, we're not going to create these kind of problems. Of course, sin will try to convince you otherwise. It'll try to convince you that doing the right thing is the hardest thing in the world, or it's impossible, and that you couldn't do it that way. But anyway, I digress a little bit there. Abner says, "Go and return," and he returned. Verse 17, "And Abner conferred with the elders of Israel, saying, 'For some time past you have been seeking David as king over you. Now then, bring it about, for the Lord has promised David, saying, "By the hand of my servant David I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and from the hand of all their enemies.' Abner also spoke to Benjamin. And then Abner went to tell David at Hebron all that Israel and the whole house of Benjamin thought good to do." Now, verse 17, when it says Abner conferred with the elders of Israel, it's put in a tense that says this conferring, this conference happened before he brought Michal back. So we have the account, he's bringing Michal back, he has to tell her current man to go home and leave, and so he does, and then we have the reference to previously Abner had conferred with the elders of Israel. And what's he trying to convince them to do? "We want you to join David. Get rid of Ishbosheth and come over to David." And what reason does he give the elders of Israel? He gives them two, actually. Yeah. One reason is God has promised to use David to save Israel from the Philistines and from all their enemies. Now, we don't have a written record of this promise being made anywhere. Not in these specific terms. We do have God telling Samuel, "This is my man, I want you to go anoint him, he's going to be king." And that may be what he's referencing. It may also be that they considered not only the anointing, but also the historical development of David's life, where David grew stronger and stronger, and he was the one that went out against the Philistines, and he was the one that was successful against them. And they may be looking at that and saying, "Well, if God anointed him to be king, and he was so successful under Saul, this must be the guy that God has chosen to be the king. And since the king is supposed to protect Israel, this is the man that's going to protect us." And so they could be lumping all of those things together. It's a little bit of conjecture. Seems to fit with the context, the biblical context for us there, but there might be another solution to that little conundrum. But we don't have that prophecy in that particular wording anywhere in the Old Testament, other than in a seminal form in David's anointing to be king. But so, yeah, one of the reasons is God's chosen this man to be king. What's the other reason? It's in verse 17. "You want him." For some time now you have been seeking David as king over you. Now go back again and remember who set up Ishbosheth as the king in Mahanaim. Abner did. So apparently, where were the elders of Israel when this happened? Well, they went along with it, but apparently that's not where their heart was at. 7 years now, David has been ruling in Hebron because Israel wouldn't come and anoint him king. Only Judah did. But we find out here that apparently they really kind of wanted to come and make this covenant with David, but Abner convinced them otherwise. Abner wanted to set up another member of Saul's house rather than of David's house. And so he's telling him, okay, you wanted David to be king for some time now, and God had said, it's by the hand of my servant David. So therefore, come on, let's go make our covenant with him. Let's go make him king, and let's get rid of Ishbosheth. Abner also spoke to Benjamin. So that tells us that a similar conference went on, not only with the tribes of Israel, but also with specifically the tribe of Benjamin. Excuse me a moment. And Abner went to tell David at Hebron all that Israel and the whole house of Benjamin thought good to do. So he's being true to the initial terms that he gave David. You know, I'm going to come, I'm going to help you establish your kingdom. David said, that's great, you can do so, just bring me Michal. So he's got Michal, he's got the support of the elders of the tribes of Israel, now it's time to go and finish this deal off. And when Abner came with 20 men to David at Hebron, David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. It's a very positive response. David is throwing this feast as a way to honor Abner and what he's trying to do. And it's also a way to show that he is accepting Abner according to the terms of their agreement. And so that means, okay, if all this goes through and David becomes king, then that's going to be a signal that Abner is going to become part of the royal court. Now again, I want you to keep in mind what Abner said at the beginning of this passage. Because would it be a good idea to have Abner as part of David's royal court? Probably not. Probably not if Abner sees himself as the moving force behind all of these things. Abner said to David, I will rise and go and will gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires. I want you to think about that. Is that what God anointed him to do? Reign over all that your heart desires? No. God's anointed David to be the king over Israel, to be a shepherd to his people. This is not about a tyrannical despot getting to do whatever he wants. That's the kind of king that Saul was. And Abner seems to be the kind of guy who is starting to push Saul's agenda in David's life. So it might not be the best matchup. I will go gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they may make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires. And so David sent Abner away, and he went in peace. Now David's being very magnanimous here. He's being very, very generous to Abner because Abner has been, for the last 7 years, resisting David's rule. And again, generally speaking in the ancient Near East, that doesn't go well for the people who were resisting you if you win. However, he has changed sides. He's clearly sworn allegiance to you. He's working to bring the rest of the country under your purview. That grants him some pardon. But David is being extremely generous here to welcome this man in, to give him a position in the cabinet, as it were, and to throw him this feast and to send him away peacefully, which he does. It's kind of a classic distinction, though, between good rulers and despotic rulers. As despotic rulers tend to destroy anybody that tries to stand against them. Good rulers who recognize that their rulership is from God, that all of their authority comes from God's delegated authority to the government, since they recognize that, they don't abuse that power. Which is why so often we've seen in government, handing some powers over to some men is a good thing, handing it over to other people is a bad thing. It all depends on whether or not the governor recognizes his delegated authority as being from God or not. So David is treating this person kindly, generously, the way God would have him to. But verse 22, there's trouble brewing in David's kingdom. We're going to see just then the servants of David arrived with Joab from a raid. We're not told exactly where they went to, but they have come back. They're probably in a mood to celebrate because they're bringing much spoil with them. This should have been a good and joyous time as they come back in carrying all these goods and probably prisoners and cattle and all sorts of things. But Abner was not with David at Hebron, for he had sent him away, and he had gone in peace. You've got to remember that little bit of information there. David has just sent Abner away, and apparently he's not very far away, when in comes the raiding party. And who is at the head of the raiding party? Joab. Okay, let's do a little remembering here. How do you think Joab and Abner are going to get along? What's that? Like oil and water, Eldon?
Blowtorch and
gasoline. Yeah, that's probably more like, it's not just that they don't mix, they are going to explode, right? Why? I'm going to ask this question so that I can have a chance to get another sip of water. Abner killed Azahel, Joab's brother. So there is not a good relationship already established between Abner and Joab. What position does Joab hold in David's kingdom?
The general?
He's the head of the army. He's the general. He's second in command. What position does Abner hold in Ishbosheth's kingdom? Same spot. Okay. We might have a little bit of a logistical problem. If we try and merge these two governments, which guy gets the spot? Now, that's tough under normal circumstances when you try to merge two corporations and see who's going to take what role. And you know, it's a little tough when one person says, oh, I got to step down and now I'm under this guy that I used to be equal to. But it's even worse when that guy's killed your brother. When there's a blood feud introduced into the matter, this becomes a serious ordeal. And this is the trouble that's brewing. As David is going to try to unite these two governments that are still at war with each other. This is not about who's going to be king. This is just about which family is going to win. Sort of like the feud that happened between the Hatfields and the McCoys some years back. This is not something that's going to be ended easily. And Joab is going to be sure to let David know that. Verse 23, when Joab and all the army that was with him came, it was told Joab, Abner and the son of Ner came to the king, and he has let him go, and he has gone in peace. That's going to set off a firestorm in Joab's mind. This is our mortal enemy, because it's personal to Joab. This is the guy that's been standing against you for 7.5 years, bolstering Ishbosheth's kingdom, trying to decimate your kingdom, and you let him go? You invited him here, you gave him a meal, and now you're letting him go? Seems like a very tactically poor decision to Joab, who's the commander of the army. So Joab went to the king and said, what have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why? It's just, he was right here. He came to you and you let him go. Why is it that you have sent him away so that he is gone? You know that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you and to know you're going out and you're coming in and to know all that you're doing. So what's the reason he says he should have apprehended him? He's spying on you. That's the only reason he's here. He's spying on you. He came down here and you walked him through your capital city, you fed him a big meal, and you let him go. David, what are you thinking? We're going to leave it here tonight with this trouble starting to boil over. Things starting to get interesting in David's kingdom, but stuff is going to come to a climax next week when we look at vengeance and rebuke in the end of the chapter. Chapter 4 is where things are really going to climax for David in this kingdom as Ishbosheth comes to an end and why that happens. But it all begins right here when Abner renounces his loyalty to Ishbosheth and defects to David's kingdom and begins working to establish David as the king, not only over Judah, but over all of Israel. But behind the scenes are going on some things that God is going to accomplish in order to ensure his purposes for David. All throughout David's campaign, David has refused to lift his own hand to fulfill God's promises. He wouldn't kill Saul when he was in the cave. He wouldn't kill Saul when Saul was sleeping. He wouldn't go in and fight against Saul openly to try and secure the kingdom for himself, because he was confident that God was going to be the one that fulfilled this promise. If God made the promise, he's going to fulfill it. We're going to have to let him do it. Now here we see him in a little way welcoming Abner, who has promised, you know what, I think I'll fulfill this promise for you. We'll see how that's going to go for Abner. Let's see what God does with this. So I'm going to leave you hanging a little bit. Here's our cliffhanger ending. So you have to imagine flashing up in your mind, to be continued. Same bat time, same bat channel. Join us next week. Any questions?